You could find one billionaire, one publicly traded company, one centimillionaire, and it could change your entire life. They could fund all the deals you want to do for the next year. They could put in half the capital you need on every deal. There's a huge ROI if you know how to navigate that family office jungle.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com. Today on the show, I have the pleasure of welcoming back to the pod Richard C. Wilson. Now, Richard was originally on the show back in 2015. We were just at episode number 29 back then. Just for some context today, we're at episode, I think, 473, and we've been going for over a decade. So I highly recommend you go back and take a listen at that show. But for those of you who don't know who Richard is, he is the founder of the world's largest investor club called the Family Office Club, or familyoffices.com. He built a massive platform of billionaires and family offices encompassing over 1,500 investors across 300 events that he has hosted. And he's also has an exclusive billionaire interviews on billionaires.com, 17 million social media followers, and over 22,000 vetted investor profiles that he's also created just recently. And I went to one of his events, Investor Super Intelligence, which is a platform of over 30 AI tools that gives founders, capital raisers, and investors a really awesome edge when coming to look to deploy capital or to even raise money around a particular deal. So really pumped and excited to have him back on the show to share his incredible knowledge with us. But Richard, get out of here. How are you, mate? Welcome back to the show. What are you doing?
Great. Appreciate you having me back here.
Yeah, mate. So I was just saying to you in the green room, I was just at one of your events last week, the Family Office. I'm going to butcher this. It was the Family Office Meetup in Beverly Hills. It was a cracking event. Before we get into that particular event, it's been 10 years since you've been on the show. And you know, I remember you back in the day. And since, you know, reconnecting, we've become and this is not a paid advertisement. I just happened to be a member of Richard's club recently. We've come back into the fold as RSM Property Group. But what's happened in the last 10 years? I'm sure a lot has happened. Do you want to give the listeners a bit of a rundown of what's been going on?
Yeah, sure. So about 10 years ago, we had gone from, you know, I spoke a couple hundred times in 17 countries and then realized we could start hosting our own events. So we did little cocktail hours, we did little half-day events, we'd do little one-day workshops, would have 5 or 10 speakers on stage. We did those once every quarter. Then we ramped up, and over the last 10 years, we've built out a calendar of having 25 to 30 live events a year. So we have 30 planned for next year. We have large events, like last week's had 400 people there. We had 75 speakers on stage over 2 days. And our next big event is in December, where we're going to have over 1,000 people at the event and 125 speakers on stage over 3 days. Also, since I've spoken with you last, we've written another half dozen books, and we've, you know, continued to do our podcast YouTube channel like you have. And then, as you mentioned, we've developed a lot of artificial intelligence tools. So we've got, you know, 40 plus ready to use pre-trained tools for the vertical of investors, investing, raising capital, deal making. So we've got the most broad set of AI tools in the industry right now. So that's the most exciting thing, I would say. But yeah, appreciate you having me back.
Yeah, well, a million ways I could go with this interview. I think the biggest one is around the evolution of family office. And I'm pretty sure I remember the interview back 10 years ago. It was 10 years ago. It was, you know, you were defining what a family office is and was. I think it's more of a common name today. People understand it. But back then they didn't, right? And so maybe just talk about how quickly that industry has grown with the wealth exploding across the globe and you know, folks that are coming into your ecosystem, you know, probably wanting services that you probably offer, right, at the club.
Right. Right. Yeah. So importantly, some people still don't know what a family office is, but, you know, when I started this 18 years ago, pretty much nobody did. There were no thought leaders really in the space. We wrote some of the first books on the industry. But nowadays they say that the family office industry manages more capital than all of private equity and all of venture capital combined. And so it's $14 trillion managed by the industry. And the more wealth that gets created, the more people find out about family offices, they want one, et cetera. Also, importantly, for anybody raising capital, you can find one billionaire, one publicly traded company, one centimillionaire, and it could change your entire life. They could fund all the deals you want to do for the next year. They could put in half the capital you need on every deal, and then it's much easier to raise the rest, et cetera. And so it can really be life-changing. And so there's a huge ROI if you know how to navigate that family office jungle. And that's a lot of what we do, is we just interview centimillionaires on stage. We interview someone who built their business for 20 years and sold their business. We interview billionaires, heads of billion-dollar family offices, angel investors, heads of other investor clubs. And the most important insight for those listening is just that family offices are essentially like super founders, like super entrepreneurs. They just got really good at doing business typically, or really good at dominating a niche sandbox. And then they've produced 7, 8, 9 figures of income every year, or had a big exit. And they're people to learn from, not just to raise capital from.
Yeah. No, one guy was telling me, you stand near the river of wealth, you sometimes might get splashed, right? Like, I think the other thing, you know, we've on the RSN side, we've raised a lot of money from retail investors, right? And you always see the other side of the fence. It's in, you know, you would be in what I'd call the more institutional world. And you're always like, oh, that looks good. One check, right, or one. But it's always, every single side's hard, right? And it's not, there's no one silver bullet. I think either there was a guy on your stage, or there's a guy, I think one of the guys on your stage was saying he's raised over, you know, billions and millions of dollars. And he said, there's no silver bullet when raising capital. And the same goes with family offices. So what's the advice that you've kind of teaching people in your events over the last 10 years that, you know, want to crack that code, that it's not just as easy as just throwing the fishing line out and someone's going to bite, you know?
Right, right. I would start local, meet in person, have people walk through a property with you, add value first, be authentic, be genuine, be laser focused. Don't raise capital for daisy chain random deals you find on LinkedIn. Do something no one else is doing, say things no one else is saying, you know, be respectful of other people's time. And then when you're putting materials together, almost nobody gets this right. Family offices and the more high quality investors you go to, they're much, much busier. And so you need to have a single sentence that draws them in. You need to have a one pager, not just a short, concise pitch deck. And you need to have a 1 minute video of you explaining your opportunity. If you don't have any of that, it doesn't cost anything. So if you don't have any of that, you're just like handicapping yourself. It's like running on one leg, you know? So you owe it to yourself to get that stuff dialed in. And you could do that all in one long day. You could knock all that out. So there's no reason not to do it.
Yeah. And I attended one of your workshops where a lot of the AI tools that, and again, AI wasn't around 10 years ago when I first interviewed you. So that's probably, I want to pivot into that. You have a lot of tools that are really changing the business. How has that been revolutionized for you? And I know personally, when I was at the conference last week, you were talking a lot about AI investing, right? And the frothiness around it. You know, it's everyone's into it. So two prongs. One is like, how has that completely changed your business? And then the second one I want to get your thoughts on is it the new gold rush that you got to be careful of, not just in, you know, investing into anything in terms of just because it's got AI on it doesn't mean it's going to be success, right?
Yeah, for sure. I would be careful. If you're a doctor listening to this, we work with a lot of doctors and dentists. It's probably like 15, 20% of our investors. And then I would lean forward on AI opportunities related to medicine, medical practices, maybe medical real estate or something, because it relates to your domain of expertise. If you invest in areas you know nothing about, then it should probably be a small investment or diversified into a whole diversified basket of things you know nothing about. Like Warren Buffett says, you know, diversification is insurance against ignorance, because like you just diversify, you have no idea what's going to work, right? But applying AI to your industry and your business, for example, if you own a bunch of self-storage or multifamily or data centers and you use AI to save energy, and you're able to get that really dialed in for your own data centers or multifamily or storage, then offering that to others or partnering with others with assets and scaling that type of an AI thing, that's related to your domain expertise. That's making your business wheel turn faster. And then you've kind of proven it out, and your best investors could be users of that AI. And they say, oh, that really works. I'll invest with you. And so in many businesses, showing, demonstrating value is the way that you get somebody to lean forward. And if you want, I could share some examples of what we're doing with AI, but I still want to talk too long. Okay.
Go into it, because I think that, just to cut you off there, for context, people who are listening, like Richard, you've gone ahead and created, I believe I mentioned, 30 tools of AI for people to use as part of your club. So take it away.
Yeah. So what we've done is just imagine I've hosted 300 investor club events. I've gone to all of them over the last 18 years. We've had 1,500 speakers on stage at our events. I've also written 13 books, interviewed 47 billionaires. We've closed well over $500 million of transactions. We've made 50 acquisitions ourselves for our platform and structured all those deals as well as deals for family offices. So put all that in a little box and it's like, okay, that's the perspective. And, you know, they say that understanding physics is a superpower in business, but also understanding the physics of how capital flows, how deals get done, how investors examine things and allocate money, understanding the physics of that and the physics of how you like build a platform, that's really important. And over 18 years, they'll pick up lots of clues directly from the horse's mouth from a centimillionaire that built up 130 T-Mobile stations and had an exit. And he's spoken at our events a couple of times and different people like that. And so what we've done is taken all those lessons and all of our data of the transcriptions of investors speaking on stage. We have 1,000 public talks from billionaires we've transcribed and put into tools, et cetera. And then what we've done is codified all of those insights from the 18 years and codified it into different mental model tools that have essentially allow you to have a due diligence nerd on tap that can do forensic due diligence, rip through a PPM, a DDQ, a pitch deck, a real estate listing, and point out red flags, top 7 questions to ask, what are top risks, and it analyzes it in 25 ways instantly. We have another one that helps coach and create all of your materials, your one-liner, your one-minute pitch video, rates your pitch deck. It analyzes your pitch deck in 25 ways. So we have developed 57 of those tools in total. 40 plus are available for our members. 30 plus are available to all of our base members. And so each of the tools has a function and is basically sharing an insight that we used to teach on stage at our workshops. And we still do teach the concepts. But instead of telling people like, hey, go create your 1 minute pitch video, go write a one liner summarizing your deal in a compelling way, then people have to go think, okay, what should I say? What should be the components of that one liner? Like, let me try to write one. Like now you upload your pitch deck and it writes 7 versions of the one liner for you based on 25 criteria and dozens of examples and 1,500 investor transcripts of feedback. And it pumps out those 7 one liners. So it's like done for you, investor capital raising, progress AI tools, essentially.
Yeah, no, and I love, and I was sitting at one of your events in Los Angeles the other week, and it occurred to me, you know, I went away from that with some great tools that you provided, but even in my own business, and for those people listening, you know, what you've essentially done, Richard, is you've collected content for the last 17 years and then able to use AI to tie a bow around that content in a digestible version. Like I went back to my office and we spent a lot of time on PPMs, right? Like I've done 30, 40 deals. I pumped a chat bot with 7 PPMs, the last 7 that I know that are good. And I'm like, my lawyer's screwed. Like he's out of a job, right? You know? And you know, now just creating those little things, but I encourage everyone like you're doing, to if you've got the knowledge expertise in whatever it might be, whatever the business is, to use the data to help you make quicker and smarter decisions because the game is changing very quickly. So I guess around all the investing rise, like I'd love to understand how family offices view investing from a risk perspective because they obviously got to that large. They're probably part of their portfolio is very protected against the downside and they've got more opportunistic investing. So what does that look like on a family office from the pie chart?
Yeah, from a broad stroke perspective, for most families I work with, they will take 1 to 3 wealth advisors and put anywhere from 25 to 40% of their net worth in the public markets. They see that as almost purely defensive. They might take some bets on, you know, Magnificent 7, or they might say, I like Costco and Tesla and I like Amazon. But then otherwise, you're just getting mass diversification usually. A sub-segment will structure their public market stuff to produce income for them. The second segment would be real estate. If the family did not make their money in real estate, which is often the case, not always, they still want real estate. That's the common thing is like, you can make your money in real estate. You might not want an auto dealership or you might not want like a certain type of private equity niche, but everyone wants real estate essentially to some degree. Usually it's 20 to 30%. if someone made their money in real estate, they might be comfortable 60 or 80% in real estate. I mean, a few families that have just about all of it, because they're familiar with how to navigate and they can be patient, not buy and sell at the wrong times, et cetera. And inside of that real estate bubble, they're typically investing in the country where they live. If their spouse is from a certain country, or they have a vacation house somewhere else, or they grew up in another country, or they travel there all the time, maybe they'll have real estate in one or two other countries, but usually where they were born or grew up, just because I know of your Australian background, et cetera. And then also they're usually picking the state in the real estate food group or just going to an ultra credible national real estate firm. But lots of times family offices are saying, oh, we like, you know, Arizona, Florida, we like the Carolinas, or like, oh, we think Nebraska's overlooked, or Kentucky's got cheap energy and, you know, data centers are going to flood there, et cetera. And they'll pick some states and usually have their favorite couple of real estate food groups. But importantly, a lot of them have never met someone who they trust maybe in a niche like mobile home parks or data centers. And at the end of the day, someone would much rather invest with someone they trust versus someone that fits exactly their checkbox down the fairway of their allocation goal. Mm-hmm. The third area, though, past public markets and real estate, is operating businesses, private equity investments, kind of alternatives. And in that area, that's typically where they might get diversification again and invest in some interesting industries, but they also look at where they want to play offense on their balance sheet. So the public markets is almost pure defense. Real estate, they see as hard asset, inflation hedge, create some income, maybe some equity bumps from things growing in value and forced appreciation. But then on the operating business side, you know, if they made their money in auto dealerships, maybe they're going to invest in auto dealerships. If they made it in crypto, maybe they got a couple crypto projects or a publicly traded company that they're funding. So I think that those are the three main segments and kind of what the portfolio looks like. And the only thing that's changed recently is a lot of investors have gotten distributions halted or cut off, or that equity at risk, or they lost their equity in deals this last year or two because of high interest rates and just deals going south. And at the same time, they've seen so much explosion in AI and up and coming things like robotics and quantum computing and the need for energy and data centers that they don't want to miss out on that massive wave of change. So they are looking for how to invest in those areas in a smart way, even though they're higher risk areas than cash flowing real estate.
Yeah, yeah. And then as an operator like myself or whoever, there's probably a lot of people who come to your events, they're specifically looking to be that expert in that little niche of that pie that you just explained. And, you know, great example for those people listening just to how the wealthy manage their money, right? And it's you could probably Google that and the same things come up. But one thing you mentioned there, which I had a chat with Neil Barwa at your actual event the other day, and on my pod the other day, was about cheap energy. Do you want to talk a little bit about that if you want to, about like particularly around, because this leads into AI, right? And the boom. And how is energy, you know, gonna change the landscape of AI? Like, it was kind of an interesting conversation that I had with him, and it blew my mind.
Yeah, I think it's changing massively. Like GPT-5 uses 100 times as much energy as GPT-4. And the only reason there's not more advanced models out, they don't have the data centers to solve what the models could already do for people. So if you're paying, you know, OpenAI $1 million a month, you're going to get something better than GPT-5 because you're helping fund those data centers, right? But not everyone can do that. So that's interesting. I think also we're not adding enough energy. So what happens is there's all these waves coming, like robotics is like physical AI. There's crypto mining. There's just normal EV car and normal consumer usage. Then you had all these AI data centers. They say data centers moved GDP more than all consumer spending last year, just constructing data centers. And so the need for energy is just massive. And there's been about $10 billion invested in like small nuclear reactor, like small modular reactors industry. It's like a new niche industry on the nuclear space, but those will take, you know, 5 years to come online minimum for the first couple. That can't really be the solution. And now solar credits are going away some. And so some people think that coal is going to come back. Some people think it'll be more natural gas. You know, I think that the cost of electricity for many people is going to go up, and there's just going to be massive shortages of energy. It seems like all these trends need more energy. So we need our energy production to be going like that. So that's something that people are talking about quite often at our conferences right now.
Yeah, no, that's it's incredible stuff to think about how, and it, one of the questions I posed to some of the people at your conference was about how do you become not the gold miner in a massive wave like AI and become a little bit more of the selling the shovels and the ropes and the buckets, right? So you don't stub your toe. And I think that around the sourcing energy or looking for energy or looking for excess energy in around producing data centers is a really smart, you know, it's adjacent, it's still related to it, but it's not, you know, as we know, technology can just cannibalize things so quickly as quickly as it's going. So as we wrap up the end of the show here, because I'm going to be very respectful of your time, I guess I've got a question for you because, you know, you've been doing this for 17 years. Where do you want to get this thing to? Like, what's the goal for you? Is there an off switch for you personally? Are you trying to get, you know, like you love it, you just want to keep going, but what's the end of goal here with the Family Office Club and personally?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm just getting started. I'm 43 after 18 years. A lot of my competitors are about to retire. They're in their 60s and 70s. And so we're trying to build like a three-piece moat. You know, we've got just about 18 million social media group members and followers. We're growing that to 100 million. We've got 47 interviews on billionaires.com. We're going to keep growing that with the quality of our investor club events through Family Office Club. And then our artificial intelligence tools, currently we have a good moat there in terms of the depth, and we're just trying to develop those ever more. You know, we're not looking to get out of the business. If a big brother publicly traded partner came that had access to tens of thousands of investors and could pump our events with investors, then for sure I'd want to figure out some sort of term sheet to take capital in and also have their investors flooding our events. That'd be great. But essentially we're looking to build one of the top three investor clubs, globally, and really just do like a really genuine, authentic job. Like at our events, we always start out the event talking about how if you're a class act, you're going to get more deals done. And if you're wealthy and not healthy, you're going to die early and have less energy. So probably you want to be ultra healthy and have that fuel becoming ultra wealthy. Like treat other people like real humans. Remember that like who you spend time with matters more than what you do. So like when I interviewed Tony Robbins for billionaires.com, he said the power of proximity is one of the most important things. And he said that he made $400 million off of one deal by being around the right people. That's why we run Family Office Club. And also we talk about things like managing your state of mind. People want to do business with people they like, that have high energy, that are extremely focused, that are passionate, that are clear about what they do, and it's very unique and value add what they do. They do not want to work with people that are stressed out, high pressure, bad mood, negative, like not seemingly experienced. So they're trying to rush everything and making people uncomfortable or odd or don't have high emotional IQ. That'll repel money away instantly. So it's really a matter of like the good news is that you're dealing with humans. So the better quality of a human being you are, the more people want to invest in you. And the more clear it is of how amazingly unique it would be to learn and work with you because of what you do, then the better you're going to do. So that's the exciting thing. That's like one of the biggest things I've learned. And then that's why I'm encouraged to keep on doing this because I just feel like there's so much more we could do and we're just getting started, you know?
I love it. I love it, mate. Well, to wrap up then the show, where can people reach you to continue the conversation a little bit in your sphere? Where do they go?
Best place would be go to familyoffices.com. If you go there, you can check out our event calendar. If you go to the tab at the top, you can see our membership options. We've got like six different ways you can get involved in the club. And if you want to shoot me an email, happy to give people feedback. It's just richard@familyoffices.com. And just like you doing this podcast, you know, we built our whole business off of trying to create good karma and just trying to add value on shows like this through YouTube videos and mini series and stuff like that. And that's really just all comes around long term, like us keeping in touch over 10 years. So I appreciate you having me back on here.
Mate, my pleasure. Look, I want to thanks again for jumping on the show. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll catch up very, very soon.
You too. Thanks, Reeve.
Well, there you have it. Another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible advice from Richard. Remember, please go check out that show I did 10 years ago with him when he was just starting the Family Office Club. He's built it to an incredible platform of attracting family offices across the globe, across many different investment, you know, investments and investment areas. from real estate, obviously through to data centers, all the way through to public markets. So definitely check out what Richard's doing over at Family Office Club. You can just Google his name as well. It's Richard C. Wilson. I want to thank you all again for taking some time out of your day to join the show, to continue to grow your IQ. The easiest way to give back to this show is to give it a 5-star review on iTunes, send it to a friend, like and subscribe, and we'll do it all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.